Welcome to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. A year ago, our guest, Reverend William Barber, and a handful of others started the Moral Monday protests in North Carolina. It was in response to Republican leadership in the state. Republicans took over the majority in the legislature in 2010 and then won the governor's mansion in 2012. The Republican supermajority rejected federal funds for Medicaid expansion, passed voting rights restrictions, slashed unemployment benefits, cut funding to public schools, amended the state constitution to ban gay marriage, and passed a measure requiring women to listen to the heartbeat of the unborn child before an abortion. This year, on February 8th, the Moral Monday movement held a massive march in Raleigh, North Carolina. More than 80,000 people from 32 states marched from Shaw University, the birthplace of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee 54 years ago, to the state capitol. Now, Moral Monday protests are held in several states across the country. So today on Your Call, we're going to be taking a close look at North Carolina's politics and growing progressive activism. Reverend William Barber, one of the key leaders of Moral Monday, says, unlike most progressive protests, the events in North Carolina did not arise in response to a particular outrage, but were years in the making. He calls Moral Monday a movement, not a moment, and we'll be joined by Reverend Barber in just a minute. We have on the line with us Tim Tyson, who's a civil rights historian at Duke University and serves as the education chair of the NAACP in North Carolina. Hi, Tim.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us. Well, we want to hear all about how this movement started, but tell me something first. How did you come up with the name? Why Moral, and what's the significance to you of that?
Well, what we've found is that when you come at things from a moral standpoint, really most people share some basic values. It's hard even for the people who are in power to say, you know, we've cut off Medicaid for 500,000 people, but because it was the right thing to do. You know, they don't. That it. Most people agree that was a bad idea. Most people realize that strong public schools are good for everybody. We found that by having a kind of a big umbrella, and then we have more room for everybody.
It's interesting because a lot of the time you don't think of the same constituents as, you know, for strong public education, anti-racist, and gay marriage activists in the same kind of bucket always.
Well, there's been a coalition politics. It's a little bit like making a quilt. You know, it's something, you're making something beautiful and useful out of the odds and ends of your necessity and what you've got. But you don't start making a quilt on a cold winter night. You start back in the summer and in the fall when you're comfortable and you get, it's a community thing that you do together. And then when that cold winter night comes, you're ready for it. And I think you have to understand that this particular quilt really started in about 2007.
Well, tell us about that. How did you begin making this quilt?
Well, we brought together first 16 different groups, the NAACP at the center of things, and then gradually we have grown. We've been doing brown and black and white organizing. We've been in touch with we've included most of the major religion denominations. We've got about 200 groups. In when the Republicans set out to pass that constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage, that was a really pivotal moment because the organized LGBT groups, the North Equality North Carolina and the Human Rights Campaign, really went into high gear. And when, you know, I think in the press, there was this false notion that African Americans were going to desert Obama over gay marriage, and certainly we're going to pass this constitutional amendment. But when Reverend Barber got out front and demonstrated that that wasn't the case, it was a strong coalition moment. And the same thing has happened recently when Duke Energy spilled coal ash all down the Dan River. It's just an environmental catastrophe of unspeakable scope. Reverend Barber has been at the forefront of that fight to force Duke Power to clean up their mess.
And how do you frame that kind of question in terms of Moral Monday and that movement?
Well, when again, we have found that most people share a basic bedrock of moral views, an understanding that there's such a thing as a common good. You know, if someone's dumping poison into the water supply, it's not too hard, it's not too divisive to ask people to say that's not good. You know, that's not good for the children. We don't, you know, and that's sort of where we have come from on it. And we found that, you know, we've been endorsed by all of the major religious denominations in the state, and labor, and the North Carolina Association of Educators, which is the largest, you know, group of teachers. Planned Parenthood is one of the strong members in our coalition. So we found that if we operate by an injury to one is an injury to all, and that we do more than just show up for each other's stuff, though we do that.
Mm.
It's not just a transactional relationship, but it's a transformative relationship where we start thinking in terms of the larger and greater good.
Well, tell us a little bit about how North Carolina, and what's been happening there politically, and how they ended up with a Republican supermajority, because President Obama won the state in 2008 and then lost it by a tiny, tiny margin in 2012. How did the Republicans end up with a supermajority?
Well, I have to say that we were a little bit asleep at the switch in 2010, and when they won the legislative races in 2010, they proceeded immediately to gerrymander the state and to start attacking voting rights, and that's has been hard on us. And on the other hand, the things that they've done, attacks on public education through a voucher system, and a deregulation of protections on clean water, assaults on women's rights. We've been, those things have brought us together. So in some ways, you know, I keep getting these emails from friends in distant states saying, oh, it's terrible what's happening in North Carolina. And I have to say, no, it's wonderful what's happening in North Carolina. Actually, we haven't been together like this in a long time.
Because it's really galvanized the movement.
You know, there were 25,000 people at the Selma March in 1965. There were 800,000 people at our march in Raleigh. It's the large. That was the largest political event in the history of this state.
Well, I want to.
So it's not a marginal political force that we've put together.
You've really built it into a movement, and that's Tim Tyson. He's a civil rights historian at Duke University, and he serves as the education chair of the NAACP in North Carolina. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, in for Rose Aguilar, and we're talking about the Moral Monday movement. We're now joined by Reverend William Barber, who's the leader of Moral Monday and head of the NAACP in North Carolina. Hi, welcome, Reverend Barber.
Hello, hello, and hello to my friend and brother, Dr. Tyson.
Well, thank you.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for joining us. Tim has been giving us a lot of the background on what led up to Moral Monday, but tell us about that first protest last April. How did it start, and what did you guys actually do?
Well, it's very interesting in terms of, and I'm sure that Tim has let you know that the Forward Together Moral Movement is really what we call it. Moral Monday is one aspect of it. Didn't start, you know, last year.
Yeah, he's been giving us all of that background.
And what we've seen. Well, what actually we saw is, you know, the integrity of this movement is that we've challenged Democrats and Republicans, and we're calling for a new language, a new way of focusing. It's not the challenge that isolates extremism. And what we saw in the first 50 days leading up to the arrest, and it's, I think, Tim, I think it's your second, my fourth, is that we had extremism on steroids. We had this group of legislators, Tea Party, backed by Art Pope and his money, basically come in and, you know, first 50 days, they bam, bam, bam. They deny 500,000 people Medicaid, 150,000 people unemployment, take 900,000 people's earned income tax credit so they could give tax breaks to 23 families. And by the way, when you take earned income tax credit, you make Ronald Reagan look like a liberal, and that's pretty extreme. But then, after cutting education and all those things, during Holy Week, and it's interesting we would be having this conversation today, they rolled out the worst voter suppression bill we had seen since Jim Crow. Now, I want your audience to understand this was prior to Shelby. So they clearly showed that they had a premeditated agenda. And this bill challenged, rolled back 40 different aspects of our law and threatened to take laws away from the people that they'd already been using, like same-day registration, early voting. For many of us, we said, that's it. Because now not only are you trying to pass all these extremist legislation, but you are trying to undermine the ability of citizens to judge you at the ballot box. Mm. And we said that if there was going to be a crucifixion of everything from women's rights to health care to education, to labor rights to unemployment, and now voting rights, there had to be a witness. Every crucifixion needs a witness. And we would witness that. We would not allow this to happen in the dark, nor would we allow it to happen in the normal conversation of Democrat versus Republican. So on April the 29th, after having met all of the terms of civil disobedience, we had tried to meet with them, we tried to negotiate. We met at the Presbyterian Church there, Davis Street. We read an open letter to the state as to why we were engaging. We went into the legislature, 17 of us, 10 citizens, 7 preachers, and even a lady on cerebral palsy. And we decided to pray and to hold placards and to talk about issues. Subsequently, after about an hour, we were all arrested for praying, for holding placards, and for talking loud, i.e., preaching. And it was amazing. I didn't think they would arrest us. I really thought that they would have a little bit more political and historical sense than that. But they came out, they brought all the police out, and they even arrested the woman with cerebral palsy. They took her right on her scooter, right on down, and right onto the paddy wagon. And it was almost as though when that happened, it was a signal, because people had been so depressed, and what are we going to do, and this, they have a majority, and we can't do anything. People began to self-organize because, see, we already had integrity. We weren't building a movement. We were building upon a movement. We were taking a next step. You know, we had marched on Democrats. We had done, but we never engaged a group of people that was so regressive and so committed to undermining our democracy and so committed to what we call crimes against democracy and passing bills that were constitutionally inconsistent, morally indefensible, and economically insane. And the next week, 34 more people said, we're going. Mm-hmm. We're going to refuse. We didn't go. Now, we didn't go to get arrested. Let me be clear about that. Article 12 of our state constitution says we are demanded to go to our legislators and share with them our grievances. We went to exercise our constitutional right. We said we would refuse to give up those rights, even if it meant arrest. And, of course, the next week, 34, then the next week, 68, the next week, kept growing. We dubbed it Moral Monday. We kept organizing, and by the end of the summer, 945 people of every race, creed, color, party, sexuality in North Carolina had been arrested, and thousands had come. And now, I think, Tim, we've had something like 114 different types of events connected to Moral Monday since April 29th of 2013. And it's growing.
How many?
114, about 10 a month.
Yeah, and now it's
all
growing nationally.
The state too.
Yeah.
All over the state.
And we've been everywhere.
In the capital.
And, you know, Tim and I can tell your audience, one of the, you know, we went during the middle of the Monday, we went out and did 25 sites to make sure the message wasn't just in Raleigh. We immediately after the last one in Raleigh, which was over 15,000 people, we headed toward Asheville. The first was in Asheville. And that's why it's important that it is not some marginalized, just black, you know, movement. It is quite diverse. It is fusion politics in the 21st century. Because we went to Asheville, it's about 4% African-American. Well over 10, 12,000 people showed up. And before we got to Asheville, we stopped in Mitchell County, which is 99% white, 89% Republican. We met with hundreds of people there, And not only did we meet with them, we found out they had been having Mall Mondays and Mall Sundays, had been coming down to Raleigh, that the Republican chair had renounced the party, his chairship, because he said, I'm not an extremist. I'm a Republican, but I'm not an extremist. And now we have an NAACP branch in Mercer County. We've never had one in the history of the state, and it's the most diverse NAACP branch in the country.
Fascinating. That's Reverend William Barber. He's the leader of Moral Monday and head of the NAACP in North Carolina. We're also speaking with Tim Tyson, who's a civil rights historian at Duke University, and he serves as the education chair of the NAACP in North Carolina. I'm Holly Kernan. You're listening to Your Call, and we're talking about the Moral Monday movement that is spreading nationally. And let me invite our listeners to join the conversation. We're at 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number. For questions that you have about what's happening in North Carolina and in other states across the South, and what lessons can other activists and organizers take away from this Moral Monday movement and the messaging that and organizing that they're doing. 866-798-TALK is our toll-free number. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And what could we build a broad-based progressive movement here in California, and how do you bring together diverse groups of people across interest issues? 866-798-TALK is the number to call us. And I'm wondering, Reverend Barber, if you could paint a picture of the state capitol on a Moral Monday now that you've been doing this for a year and that, there's precedent for it. It's not a surprise anymore. What does it look like on a Monday in the state capitol?
Well, again, we're not necessarily in capitol on Monday. We're in the capitol when they're in session. But the power of Moral Monday, when they left, we went home behind them. We went into the legislative districts. One of the things your listening audience should understand is that, you know, the Moral Monday movement is, and the Forward Together process, again, is not just calling folk together, saying, putting names on a paper. We've spent 6-7 hard, long years developing relationships, developing a comprehensive intersectional agenda. Is rooted in this idea of fusion politics that has at its center, you know, an anti-racism, anti-poverty, pro-justice, deeply moral, deeply constitutional, transformative focus. It is a reality that if we want to change America, we've got to change the South. And you want to change the South, you have to focus on these state legislatures intensely with a clear agenda, so that because Alec learned that 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they said if we focus on state legislatures, you may get a president, but we can control who gets in the Congress. We can control who's in these state legislatures, and then thereby they can control educational funding. They can control voting laws and so much else.
So
one of the things what the Moral Monday looks like now is, like, last week we were in Iredell County, right in the heart. The governor was there. There are four extremist legislators in that county. He was inside at the Chamber of Commerce. We had hundreds of people of all different races, creeds, colors, and sexualities outside challenging the policies that he and those legislative extremists have engaged in, and we specify how their policies have hurt people. So we said to people in Iredell County, did you know that when they cut 500,000 people's Medicaid, that 5,900 of those people were right here in Iredell County? We will be back in Raleigh on May the 19th. When they come back, we'll come back.
Hmm.
So that's one of the geniuses of the movie.
And, Tim mentioned gerrymandering at the beginning, but maybe you guys could tell us just a little bit more about what happened with the redistricting in 2011.
Well, we're actually in court now suing them, and it points to another reason why we have to pass, when we fix the Voting Rights Act in Congress, we can't accept what they have now that's going to leave North Carolina, South Carolina, Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, and Virginia uncovered. Because without preclearance, we are left to the, you know, to some very despairing realities when it comes to voting rights. But this is what they did. Even though we had African Americans that had been elected, for instance, in non-majority districts, when they got into office, they used the old tactic of stacking, packing, and bleaching.
Say that again: stacking,
packing,
and bleaching.
Now, let me just give your audience a little bit of history. They argued that they needed to create these extreme majority black districts because of the potential of racial discrimination in the redistricting case, but now in the voter suppression case that we are suing them on in court, they're saying there's no evidence of racial discrimination. So it's counterintuitive, really, what they're doing. But what they said was, we need to stack 52% of African Americans into 27 out of 120 House seat districts. And we need to stack 49% of African Americans into 19 out of 50 Senate districts. By doing this, they undermine the influence of the black vote, and they undercut the ability of blacks and whites to form fusing coalitions, not necessarily to elect black people, but to elect candidates of their choice that would be more progressive. The Justice Department pre-cleared it. We sued. We're in court now, but the law is moving forward. So the 2012 election were under that redistricting map. That is the worst redistricting we've seen since the 19th century. We have valid research on this.
And how long do you think it'll take for that to go through the courts?
We could be there for another election cycle or more. I mean, it's hard. It's tough. It's tough work to go after them. But what it did is in the 2012 election, you had a higher turnout of African Americans than any other demographic, 70%. In fact, the highest time in the nation.
Hmm.
And then secondly, you had 120-some thousand more people vote for progressives than extremists, but they won because the votes were stacked, packed, and bleached. You know, stacking is when you stack them in a district. Packing is you pack minorities in a district. And bleaching is when you remove minorities from other districts to make them, i.e., more white and more conservative, more extreme.
Stacked, packed, and bleached. A listener writes in and says, how does the speed with which the legislature has rolled back voting rights and abortion rights and enacted cuts resemble what has taken place in other states where Republican Tea Party have a majority?
Very much so. Very much so. That, you know, they call us outsiders when, in fact, the American Legislative Exchange Council's agenda is national. And these laws that they pass have nothing to do with North Carolina, its traditions, its needs, its values. And it's an identical playbook to the one they've passed in many other states. So that's one reason why I think that Moral Monday and Moral movement has spoken to people across the country is because they're facing the same reactionary forces.
And also, I would say to your listener, it is also it's the playbook, and it is the natural. It's kind of like social physics. We had won so much in the past 4 years before they took their office with through our coalition and progressive mobilization, that it's almost like how in 1872 the redemption movement rose up to stop Reconstruction, or the white Southern strategy movement rose up in 1968 to stop all the advances of the civil rights movement. What they're doing is a reaction to our strength, not to our weakness, and they're using every trick in the book to engage, which is why we need a moral movement, because we must do three things.
Reverend Barber, yeah. I'm going to stop you there, and we'll come right back to you after a short break. Reverend Barber is leader of Moral Monday and head of the NAACP in North Carolina. Tim Tyson is a civil rights historian at Duke University, and we're talking about Moral Monday movement in North Carolina and how it's spreading across the nation. I'm Holly Kernan. You're listening to Your Call. We'll be right back.
This is Your Call on KALW San Francisco, local public radio. If you have a perspective that you haven't heard yet in today's discussion, or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join our conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's a toll-free call, 866-798-TALK. You can also send your question via email or comment if you like. The email address inbox is feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock from the BBC, it's World Have Your Say. Following that at noon today, Backstory, here on local public radio.
For those of you joining us now, this is Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. Tomorrow we'll talk with two Idle No More environmental activists in Canada about how they are doing environmental activism across the globe. Today we're learning about the Moral Monday movement in North Carolina, and we're joined by guest Tim Tyson, who's a civil rights historian at Duke University and the education chair of the NAACP in North Carolina, and Reverend William Barber, who's founder of Moral Monday and head of the NAACP in North Carolina. I'll get to your calls in just a moment. The number to join our conversation is 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. If you have local examples of bringing together diverse activists across issues, give us a call, 866-798-8255, or email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Reverend Barber, I apologize for cutting you off. We had to go to a break there, but you were talking about, you know, where this fits in the historic movement, and you were talking about Reconstruction and the reaction to the activism that was already happening in North Carolina.
Well, again, as Dr. Tyson, you know, would probably agree, the idea of fusion politics is not new, and we certainly need to revisit that history and understand some of where we are right now and what the prescription is for extremism. Because, as I said, if you look at what happened between 1860 and 1872 at Reconstruction, then you had this reaction. It was called the Redemption Movement in around 72 and on, that sought to deconstruct Reconstruction. You had the Civil Rights Movement, if you time it from 54 to 68. Then you have the rising of the White Southern Strategy, a new way to talk about race, called Southerners to vote against their own best interests, and sought to undermine the kind of fusion politics that brought us the Civil Rights Movement. We are seeing, we believe, with this Tea Party extremism towards state capitals, an attempt to stop, if you will, a third Reconstruction, to undermine progress, deconstruct fusion movements like ours. And what we have to do is understand it, be diligent, push forward, and recognize that's why we need a moral discussion that gives room for Republicans and Democrats and other folks to come in a movement that says, listen, these policies are not just bad policies. They are extreme. They are immoral. They don't fit our deepest moral values, our deepest constitutional values. We must have another kind of public policy discussion that helps people, as I said on that day when more than 80,000 people showed up, understand in America, in these states, we have two options. We can take the road to political destruction that's rooted in extremism, where the entire public policy can be summed up in this: deny voting rights, deny education, deny health care, deny women's rights, deny LGBT rights, deny labor rights, and if you really want a great society, give more taxes, cuts to the greedy, and give people guns. That's ludicrous. That kind of philosophy, that's the road to destruction. We must say, no, there's higher ground. There's a higher ground.
And there's so many people who want to talk with you, Reverend Barber. Let me go to Rod in Oakland. Hi, Rod. Welcome to Your Call.
Hi. Good morning. Good morning, Reverend. And first of all, let me salute you and just offer my praise for the work you're doing. My background is I'm a 30-year Navy veteran. I was transferred. My family were service people, and we were transferred to the neighboring state there in Tidewater in Virginia. And I was so shocked as a young man, as a teenager, at the racism there. You may recall they called it massive resistance in the old Dominion. In any event, I joined the service. I defended the Constitution for 30 years against enemies, foreign, but now we have you've outlined it so perfectly. We have a strong domestic enemy, which is ALEC. Never mind the Tea Party, they're very vocal, but ALEC is under the radar and very, very dangerous. And I salute your efforts. And the final question is, might eventually, as the fusion politics grow in strength and numbers, might the Citizens United Supreme Court decision, might that be eventually addressed with a movement for a constitutional amendment? Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rod.
Well,
yeah,
I
Reverend
think we
Barber.
We have to get at the issue of money and politics, and Tim would agree, and I'll let him talk some on this as well, that North Carolina, if you want to see the bad things. If you want to see what happens when extremism takes over a state legislature, if you want to see what happens when a business person is allowed to put $50 million of their own dollars into political elections in a state, if you want to see what happens when a person is allowed to buy influence to the point that they sit in the room when redistricting maps are redrawn and then fund those districts that they helped draw, then once they get a governor and a legislator elected, then manipulate themselves to become budget director. then North Carolina is the place you need to look and see, and why we must look at many avenues to change and what Citizens United has done, which in essence says that people's money trumps the vote of individual citizens, that money is more powerful than the movement and the vote and the democratic participation of the people. And I want to say to my friend who just said that about the veterans, Holly, you asked how does a moral Monday look?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's interesting is how when we go into the legislature, it's led by clergy of all different faiths. And there are people there who don't necessarily believe in religion, but who believe in a moral universe.
Mm-hmm.
You know the second group that's leading us?
Do tell.
Veterans.
Veterans.
Who have come from everywhere. I mean, veterans who and veterans who have submitted themselves to civil disobedience because they say we did not. And I don't mean veterans by party, because we never ask what their party is.
Mm-hmm.
But veterans of different parties, different colors, different races, who stand and say, I will not give up my constitutional rights because I fought on foreign land to protect this democracy. And what I see going on in this legislature is a violation of what I fought for.
And do any of the activists joining your coalition surprise you? I know you mentioned that some people have come and said, I'm a Republican, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, tell me.
It not only does it sit there and them surprise us, it surprises the people that are against us. They thought they were going to scare us away by using something called the old Mississippi sovereign trick. So, you know, my good friend Tim, they really wanted his picture. So what they did, they put all of our pictures, our addresses, our workplaces, and into a database.
Salaries where they could get them.
Outsiders. When their own database computed, they found out that, number one, 97-98% of us were from North Carolina. Number two, 11-16% were Republican and independents. So, of course, they quickly put that study up. Because the point was to suggest we were just a bunch of leftists.
Uh-huh.
The reality is we've seen millionaires go to jail beside unemployed workers. We've seen doctors, high-ranking doctors, go to jail on behalf of their patients that don't have insurance. Republicans don't. We've seen gay and straight people hold hands together and go to jail. We've seen people of faith go to jail with people who may be agnostic or atheist, but who agree with our deepest constitutional values and moral values. So because what they do understand is the intersectionality of mm-hmm. our values, and more importantly, the intersectionality of the public policy that we're concerned about.
And that's Reverend William Barber, who's leader of Moral Monday and head of the NAACP in North Carolina. And we're talking about the Moral Monday movement, which began in North Carolina with Tim Tyson, who's a civil rights historian at Duke University and serves as the education chair of the NAACP in North Carolina. I'm Holly Kernan. You're listening to Your Call. And I want to get to more callers because there's a lot of people who want to join your conversation. Let's go to John in San Francisco. Hi, John. Welcome to Your Call.
Yeah, good morning, Holly, and thanks very much for taking my call. There's a key Senate seat coming up in this November, that held by Kay Hagan, and I'm interested in knowing what will this mobilization that's occurring, what impact will that have on the Senate race? Will this enable Senator Hagan to be reelected? Because she's supposed to be having a very tough race.
Well, we're a nonpartisan coalition, and we don't get into parties, but one thing that's very clear, though it's not quite clear who's going to be the Republican nominee, it looks like it's going to be an extremist either way, that what's likely to happen because of the energy that the Forward Together Moral Movement has brought to North Carolina, it looks like we're likely to have a high turnout. And, of course, when people are putting in policies that serve only the very wealthy, then high turnout is bad for them. That's why they want to restrict voting so much.
Hmm.
So I would, you know, just as outside of the movement's concern, I would say that a high turnout is bad news for the extremists.
Yes, and Holly, the other piece of that is that what our movement is doing, see, because it's not just, you know, people sometimes say, well, you all mobilized 80,000 people, what else? And we want to say, wait, hold it. In the South, in the dead of winter, you mobilized nearly 80,000 people that are as diverse as anything in America, in the South, that has an anti-race, anti-apartheid. That is significant. Then you have those 80,000 people agree to go back and register 20 more non-registered voters.
Hmm.
And then you have those people agree that they will be a part of voter turnout, because we don't have to be partisan to be engaged in the turnout. And then we are across the state talking about the issues that politicians should be judged by. And then you have young people decide that they're going to reinstitute Freedom Summer 50 years after the first Freedom Summer and move specifically into 50 to 60 counties around this state all summer. And then we're in court, because the other part of our movement is we have a not only a legislative angle, but a legal movement.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in court right now fighting to get an injunction against all of this voter suppression.
Right.
And the judge has given us that opportunity, and we believe we'll win, which then means none of the laws that they have put in place will be utilized in the fall election. So what we're doing will have impact. While we will not endorse any candidate, what we will certainly do is endorse a mobilization to the polls like never before, and a serious, very conscious understanding of what's at stake and the policies that people ought to be concerned about.
And that's what we're talking about on your call, what's at stake with the Forward Together moral movement that started in North Carolina with Reverend William Barber, who's leader and head of the NAACP in North Carolina, and Tim Tyson, who's a civil rights historian at Duke University and the education chair of the NAACP in North Carolina. And let me give out the number. We've got a couple open lines. 866-798-8255 is our toll-free number to join the conversation about this Moral Monday movement that started in North Carolina is expanding across the South. 866-798-TALK is the number to call. And what questions do you have about how we build a broad-based progressive movement here in Carolina? What questions do you have about what's happening in North Carolina and what that actually means for the rest of us across the country? 866-798-TALK is our toll-free number. You can also send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's go to Andy in Redwood City. Welcome to your call, Andy.
Hi, Holly.
Hi.
Good morning. Good morning to Mr. Tim Tyson and Reverend Barber. You
Good
guys
morning.
Bring us hope, man. You really do. We have a local VC, Tom Perkins, who indicates that your worth really is the dollars you have. And the amount of votes you have should be what you pay in taxes. And I'm sure it's very similar in North Carolina. All they care about is the money. Your worth as a person means nothing. And I was wondering, since both parties are completely bought off by corporations and they're a mutual protection racket, are you working with people like the Working Families Party, which is big in New York, New Jersey, and I've even seen them in Oregon, and then you have the Progressive Party in Vermont, who at least try to bring civil rights and voting rights into the equation and move the agenda more to working people? Are you guys involved with that in the political sphere? Thanks.
Yeah, tell us how you're organizing across different groups and coalitions.
Well, one of the things is, if you look at the Forward Together movement, and originally it was the Historic Thousands on Jones Street People's Coalition, as I said, I give the centerpiece. These are our five core values, if you will, that we organize, that we call intersectional agenda,
mm-hmm.
that keeps it from being just about a person. Number one, a pro-labor, pro-worker, anti-poverty, economic sustainability. is number one. Number two, educational equality for every child and access to community and four-year universities. Number three, and under each one of these, we have very clear action steps.
Hmm.
Number three, health care for all, access to affordable health care, Medicaid expansion, and environmental protection, environmental justice. Number four, dealing with the injustices and disparities in the criminal justice system as it relates to black people, minorities, and poor whites. And number five, expanding and protecting women's rights, voting rights, LGBT rights, and immigrant rights. We believe those five areas, and as you notice, the economic piece at the top, clearly have intersectional. So we're working. We're the Forward Together movement. Tomorrow movement is with the fast food workers, as we're calling them. We've marched with them. They've had prominence in our rallies and in our policy. We're pushing for living wages. We're pushing for labor rights in a so-called right-to-work state. We're saying that the labor movement does not need to give up the South and walk away from the South. We need to show the connection between an anti-racist movement, anti-poverty movement, with a pro-labor focus. And so the answer to your caller is that this movement is deep in its coalition building. It is not surface. It is not merely transactional either. Because how we got here is we got people to get in a room, and we said to the educational advocates, tell us the major policies you're concerned about, and then line up for us who are all of the legislators against. The same thing with workers, same thing with environmentalists, same thing with people who care about LGBT issues, same thing with voting rights. And we found out that the same personalities and the same political ideologies were fighting us all. And then we asked an NAACP question, NAACP perspective. We said, now, if we know who's fighting us, and if we know the ideology is against us, and they are united, who is the fool if we're not united?
Well, is there one of those core values that is more difficult to cut across boundaries? These are very broad. This is a broad range of.
They are.
Uh huh.
Yeah, they're all difficult if you isolate them. That's the point. The difficulty is getting people to understand that you cannot build a movement in isolation where you only care about your issue.
Mm.
For instance, I was with Planned Parenthood a few weeks ago for their gala, and Planned Parenthood said, well, how do you join with Planned Parenthood when there is a history of eugenics in the past?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there is, and we own that. And the NAACP does not have a position on abortion. So how do you build that? Well, first of all, we in the NAACP understand Planned Parenthood is about more than abortion. Let's look at how they provide for women who need cervical exams, and for poor women, and for breast exams. And let's take our principle of equal rights, regardless of how we feel about a particular area, how we feel about equal protection under the law and not criminalizing people's decisions is a way we can unite. But secondly, we need Planned Parenthood to understand that if you're concerned about women's rights, if you're concerned about health care for women, you also have to be concerned about, for instance, our Congress now considering a law that would fix the debacle of the Shelby decision by leaving out a substantial number of states from preclearance, like North Carolina. Why? Because you don't have preclearance, you allow the extremists to do what they want, and you're going to lose many of the politicians that will be sympathetic to your issues. So Planned Parenthood has to be concerned about voting rights. We have to be concerned about women's rights and understand the intersectionality. So when the president of Planned Parenthood and I go on the TV together, for instance, do an interview, that the announcer will say to Janet Cohen, tell us why you women are in this issue. She said, well, I don't want to talk about women's issue. I want to talk about voting rights. And they'll say, but you're Planned Parenthood. She says, I know, but I want to talk about voting rights. Then they'll ask me about voting rights. I said, no, I want to talk about voting rights. I want to talk about women's rights.
Hmm.
So we model intersectionality. We model that you're not going to pick us off where if one group wins their issue, then the other group is on their own. The true movement fusion coalition is where we understand our common destiny together.
And somebody writes in and asks us you to tell us, maybe, Tim, what's happened with education? I think I read that $90 million were slashed from public school budgets and moved to charter schools.
Yeah, worst of all, not only are they chopping education and firing thousands of teachers and teachers' aides, but they're transferring that via a voucher program to private corporations. Oddly enough, you know, this is the destruction of our public school system, and I think that's one reason why, for example, in the mountain regions of the state, up in Mitchell County where we were, but across that region, where you've got high, you know, 80% Republican, 85% Republican, those places are in revolt against these extremists in the legislature because public schools mean so much to them. They don't have money for private schools, and public schools are so central to the lives of those communities that it matters not that they're 99% white and 85% Republican. They're organizing Moral Monday movements.
And Reverend Barber talked about sort of the sense of history that this movement has, and you're a civil rights historian. How do you think the civil rights movement is informing this new movement and building on that?
Well, I think it's an inspiration. We're part of that tradition. We come out of that tradition in many ways. But, you know, everyone has to face the challenges of their time. And we're doing things that the civil rights movement dreamed of doing in many ways. We're a much more diverse and interracial movement. There was an effort to do that and some success back then. But, you know, you look out at the multicolored quilt that you see at Moral Monday rallies, you're looking at a movement for the future beyond some of the divisions that have plagued us in the past, and talking more about economics, for example, and public education and the issues that tie us together.
And, you know, we're running up against time, so I'm not going to get to more callers. I apologize to people, but I just want to hear from both of you some thoughts on this movement. In some ways, the Moral Monday movement was in opposition to a lot of these, what you call extremist policies. Where do you see the future of this movement going, Reverend Barber?
Well, when I've been to Wisconsin, where they're starting, Missouri, going to Arkansas, Alabama, Georgia started, we believe that to change America, to change this extremism, we have to have state-based movements that with homegrown leadership. There's not a movement where people can helicopter in from somewhere, you know, for an event. Moral Monday is not an event. It's a movement. It's not a moment. It needs to be anti-racist, anti-poverty, pro-labor, pro-justice, deeply moral, deeply constitutional, rooted in our deepest fusion traditions that we know through history, and it has to be transformed, and it has to be committed to a long-term movement. And it's not just about an election. It's about changing the conscience and the conversation of public policy and public debate. We think it has to happen, and it surely has to happen in the South, because you want to change America, you've got to address this extremism in the South and show whites and blacks and brown people their common destinies. I'm going to talk about it at Riverside Church this coming Palm Sunday, talking about the need for a moral movement for the nation. I believe it is essential. I believe we have to create both the language and the space for people of all different races, colors, creeds, backgrounds, political persuasion to, as Abraham Lincoln said, lean in or be led by the better angels of ourselves. I think that's the time we're in. I do believe we're in some parts of a kind of a third reconstruction, and I think we've got some real choice to make. We're either going to continue to take some very large steps backwards that will just undermine the promises of our democracies, or we're going to come together and demand to go toward higher ground. And as our mantra says, we either go forward together and choose not to take one step back, or we go backwards in some ways that are just not who we are as a people and who our greatest values demand that we be.
Armand in San Francisco writes, it's long past time where we should start calling the radical right as the American Taliban. There appears to be very little difference in their beliefs and goals. That's outrageous, the things that they're pushing, and only an indication of how far they actually want to go. And Tim, Reverend Barber is talking about, you know, this movement as being long-term. It's a lot harder to sustain something long-term that's about a movement and about pushing values. It's a little easier sometimes to mobilize around the latest outrage. What do you think about having the long view on this movement and its viability?
Well, I think that's why it's so important to understand that it is a movement and not a moment, and that it's not about how many people showed up on one day, even though, you know, it was great that
80,000,
we had 80,000,
yeah.
And that's we were thrilled. But it's really not about that. It's about relationships that go over a long period of time, people acting on their highest moral values in concert with one another, and confronting this situation where our democracy is either going to drown in a river of money, or we're going to go forward together.
And that's that great quilt. That's a wonderful point for us to end on. I wish we had more time. Tim Tyson is a civil rights historian at Duke University. Reverend William Barber is the founder of Moral Monday and the head of the NAACP in North Carolina. We'll put links to all of that information, and you can continue this conversation at yourcallradio.org. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for your calls and emails. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. How did four women in Saskatchewan launch a global movement to protect the environment and defend Indigenous sovereignty? On the next Your Call, we'll talk with Nina Wilson and Jessica Gordon, two of the founders of Idle No More, the movement that burst on the scene 18 months ago in opposition to government plans to expand mining, drilling, and logging on First Nation lands in Canada. How did they spark a mass movement, and what connections are they making with activists outside of Canada? It's Your Call with Matt Martin and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on, and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco, with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz.